From Beijing to Berlin, from Singapore to South Carolina, from Cape Town to Canada, the world turns on business and commerce. And where there is such industry, disagreements are bound to happen. Sometimes these disagreements are resolved. For the rest of the time, they end up in the capable hands of professionals around the world. The dynamic and interesting stories of these individuals is what you will hear on this show, Tales of the Tribunal.
Welcome back to Tales of the Tribunal with Chris Campbell. I am your host, Chris Campbell, here to tell you another tale, another story from the wide, wide world of international dispute resolution. I am still here in the great United States of America, and I'm recording the final couple of episodes for this season, which reminds me and brings me to an astounding realization that we find ourselves on the last four episodes of this season. So savor them, enjoy them, because these will be the last few episodes of the season, and maybe we'll throw some bonus content in there, and I think we'll have some surprise guests for you too. Before we get into today's show, like we've been talking about the past couple of weeks on the show, September 8th through the 10th, if you happen to be in or around or within traveling distance to Atlanta, their Atlas is having their annual conference on those days. Several days of informative international arbitration and dispute resolution content. The topic of this year's conference is Points of View, Multiple Perspectives on International Arbitration. As we talked about in weeks past, that includes tertulia discussions on various topics in international arbitration, which are just more or less informal conversations meant to raise viewpoints that are not typically heard. The keynote address will be given by Mr. George Berman of Columbia Law School. And perhaps one of the most exciting things about this conference is it is in combination with the Global Arbitration Review, which always puts on great events. They put on a fantastic event in Atlanta in conjunction with their conference last year. I was there. Witty and informative debate among some of the panelists and other attendees at the conference. But enough about that. Let's get into today's show. So we're going to give you just a couple of hints as to who our guests are today. Our guest today actually did not want to be a lawyer. She wanted to be a diplomat or perhaps work in some other area of international relations. She is a French and Pakistani background, and she has been a vocal advocate for Pakistan. I am talking about Ms. Sadia Bhatti. Now, Sadia and I had a chance to sit down during my tour of London a couple of months ago now, and she had some really fascinating takes on the development of international arbitration, the increase in diversity, especially as it goes to gender diversity, and what that means going forward for a new generation of international dispute resolution practitioners. Sadia practices with the Guide law firm, is a French law firm, and she has done a lot of interesting work already. So sit back, make yourself comfortable, and enjoy the show. We'll see you on the other side.
Welcome back to Tales of the Tribunal with Chris Campbell. I am your host, Chris Campbell, here on another adventure, an epic tale, some might say, of another profile of a person and professional that works in the wide world of international dispute resolution. This week's tale is a story of none other than Ms. Sadia Bhatti. Hey, Sadia.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing well, doing well. And we're glad to have you on the show here today. So as I start with every one of these discussions, can you tell me, who are you? Where are you from? What do the people need to know?
What do the people need to know? Well, my name is Sadia Bhatti. Where are you from? That's a question I get a lot, actually. And I'm going to start by this. So my parents are originally from Pakistan. I was born and raised up in France, in a little town called Chantilly. I went to school in Paris and in France, actually, also in Bretagne, in Rennes. and then I completed my law degree in France and also in the U.S. So I went to the U.S. So I'm both French and American qualified. My first experience in arbitration was in Paris. Then I moved to New York for a couple of years. And now I'm here in London. So I am a French national from Pakistani origin, and I imagine that I am totally European still. Yes.
So, truly an international woman of mystery. Okay. So growing in France, so you speak French, of course.
Yes,
okay.
Yes, French is my first language. Yes.
Oh, yes. Wow. Okay. Well, so fantastic. So how about
How about a little bit more into that journey? So, you're right now, where are you? Which law firm?
So I'm with Gide, Loi & Noel here in London.
Ah, fantastic.
Yes, Gide. So it's a French firm. And interestingly, I actually started my career with Gide in Paris as my first job as an associate. And I rejoined them just about 2 years ago after doing a bits and, you know, traveling about in New York and then going to other firms. Just rejoined them 2 years ago.
Oh, fantastic. So finally returned home.
Exactly. That's exactly what everyone is saying. Yeah, returning home. And very pleased about it. Yes.
Okay. And what about, and so at Gide, what is your day-to-day look like? What kind of work or what kind of things do you do?
Yeah. So Gide is actually one of the, if not the only actually French law firm that has international offices. We do our work, even though it's a French firm, is very much global, I would say. I mean, I think in our DNA, there is the Francophone and French law element. So a lot of the work that we have done traditionally in arbitration has been either African focused.
Oh, wow.
So Francophone Africa, for starters. But it has also been an interesting mix of work because a lot of our partners who are in arbitration used to be in projects finance as well. And so there's this link, this strong link with our projects finance team. So a lot of projects that go wrong, et cetera, in the African region, for example, that's the kind of work that we do. And then there's also, you know, because we have offices in Asia, there's a case right now that's handled by some colleagues that is a Vietnamian International Arbitration Center case.
Wow.
My first case was actually a Hong Kong International Arbitration Center case. And it's very international in that sense that even though we used to have a lot of more offices that we have now, right now we have 12 offices, but we have like a best friends network. So even in this office in London, we're very close to a Spanish and Italian and a German firm. So it's our continental kind of best friends arrangement,
sure.
Non-exclusive, which works actually really well. And for example, one of the recent cases I worked on was for a Spanish client as a result of that. And we came back from hearings about a month ago in Riyadh. So very international in that sense.
Sure.
In terms of the kind of work that we do, so it's a mix, I would say predominantly in the recent years, commercial arbitration, but we also have an investment arbitration footprint, if I may say. I
think okay.
One of the oldest cases in the textbook cases in arbitration have been handled by our lawyers at Gide, and I think a lot of people don't know that.
Well, what's the name of which case?
So, for example, the Pay Casado Republic of Chile case,
which is...
one of the examples of arbitration being way too long. It's been going on for 25 plus years, is one of the initial cases that has been handled from the firm. It's a very original case, A, because it's long, two, because I think the tribunals changed like more than three times, which is really, you know, not usual. And also thirdly, because we've been representing an individual as opposed to a company, which has a whole human dimension to it, which is very different. And you know, it's very interesting in that sense to work with the team in those types of cases. Yes.
Sure. So, well, let's back up for just a second.
Yeah.
Why law? I mean, what made you want to be an advocate in the first place?
Why law? Well, actually, I have a confession to make. Initially, I was more interested in international relations and political science.
Really?
I come from an international background, so my parents, having moved to Pakistan, was always surrounded by very international people. When I moved to the U.S. to study initially, I was very interested in working at an international organization. And before that, I actually had worked at UNESCO for a bit.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So very different kind of thing. And my ambition was I do want to work at the UN. And then, of course, I was a law student in France, so I thought I'm going to use, you know, international law to do a little bit more policy work, etc. And then I discovered the world of international arbitration and public international law. And I thought, well, actually, you know, it's, I had this idea, this ideal about how things work in an international organization, which I think is very romanticized. It's actually, you can do a lot of funky work in a law firm.
Funky work. All right. Well,
no,
okay.
I think it's true. I think you do get very close to the idea that a lot of people have that these organizations do, whether it's public international law, human rights work, et cetera.
Sure.
And I realized that when I started working in arbitration, yes.
Okay. So you work in a law firm, and, you know, as we know from talking with other guests and just the kind of the mythos of working in a law firm, mm-hmm. that can just be a very, you know, busy time, busy yes. Way of life.
Yes.
Are there any side projects, any extracurricular things that you're working on in the world of international dispute resolution or just in general?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think it's very important, especially in this field, to have, to do things in addition to counsel work, just because you need to be in line with what your peers are discussing at conferences, et cetera. So I meet tremendous, people who are extremely talented when I'm outside of, you know, the everyday, not that I'm not working with talented people, I work with extremely talented people, but it's just very, I think it's really, it keeps you sane to get out of that circle of people you meet every day.
Sure.
So because I'm a grad from Harvard Law School, I'm part of this organization called Harvard W3D, so Women in Defense, Diplomacy, and Development.
Okay.
And they have a London chapter, of which I'm a president here in London. So we organize monthly roundtables where we have discussion on women issues, and they're women from all these three different fields of work. So it's not just law.
Now, do you have to be a Harvard graduate to take part? Or?
Well, it's initiated by Harvard grad students, okay. But the roundtable discussions are open for anyone to attend. So it's actually, I've met so many incredible, people there. And also it's a women group, but it's open to men also,
okay. Think,
which is also an important thing to mention. So there's this thing. And then also, because I'm originally from Pakistan, I have a soft spot, obviously, for the Pakistan, as a country and Pakistani people.
Sure.
So recently I've been involved in the SICA Young Group, which is the Center of International Arbitration Center, in Pakistan. And they have a young group there, and they're promoting arbitration in Pakistan. So I'm involved in that activity quite a bit. We're organizing one of their launch events for the young group in Islamabad in the coming months.
Sure.
And I try to keep myself busy also helping, mentoring students and young practitioners, and a part of Arbitral Women. There's a lot of women elements in the association that I'm part of. It's the kind of work that I'm really passionate about, and investment arbitration groups as well. I'm part of EFILA, which is the European Federation of Investment Law and Arbitration.
Yes.
So a think tank to, think about issues that concern investment arbitration. So very different things, I would say. Yeah.
Sure. No, so you're busy. Okay. How about, so within those world of the different activities or organizations you're involved with, do you have any specific projects, anything big that's coming up that you want to let folks know about?
Yes. Well, actually, I'm really excited about this upcoming conference in Pakistan. I mean, this is a big thing for us. I mean, we've done conferences in the past. I was lucky enough to be part of the organization committee for Young ICA, which was the first training we did in Lahore in Pakistan. This one we're doing in Islamabad, so we're getting closer to the government.
Right.
And I think I'm excited about it for different reasons. I mean, because we're going to do it in Islamabad, but also because ever since I did the first training, I have seen incredibly talented young people in Pakistan that are willing, and very interested into international arbitration. And that's one thing that I saw. The second thing that I saw is so many different people in Europe and in the U.S. that have offered me, to go to Pakistan and participate in the training for Pakistani lawyers. And so we have had tremendous, support from outside of Pakistan to help Pakistan. And now we have the government support, not officially, I can't, but they are very keen to get involved in that kind of project.
Right.
So I'm seeing a lot of positive, momentum to develop things in this jurisdiction. And so I am, as you can probably feel, very just excited about it to help the practitioners there to help the jurisdiction as a whole to kind of open their mind to arbitration. I mean, it is a bit of a paradox, this jurisdiction, because they were the first country to sign a bilateral investment treaty.
Really?
In the 50s with Germany.
Wow, okay.
Yes, I mean, that's you know, something that people don't usually know about. But
they should know,
true.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they were one of the first countries that ratified the New York Convention as well. And I think there's just been a bit of they've now been dragged away from developing as much as any other jurisdiction would normally do, I think, in that sphere. And so I'm hoping that, you know, by creating, you know, and holding on to these positive momentums, things will evolve in a positive way. Yeah.
Right. So what are the dates for the conference? Do you guys have dates?
Yes, of course. Sorry for not being very specific. The conference, we haven't officially launched, you know, the flyers, et cetera, but I can tell you it's going to be on the 15th and 16th November in 2019 and in Islamabad. Yes.
Okay. Well, great. Well, we'll look out for that and we'll make sure to add in the show notes,
yes,
the registration link and all that fun
stuff.
Yeah,
that would be really great.
That's exciting.
Thank you very much. And as I said, we're having these monthly roundtable discussions for women in arbitration and, you know, generally speaking here in London. So anyone who's interested should get in touch. And I think we learn so much more from practitioners from within the community, but also from outside of the arbitration community, just because we have the same problem, you know, problems and some issues, whether it's in terms of management or career management or, you know, any other work issues. So it's good to discuss amongst the community, of course, but also I think, you know, with other people. So I'm keeping that momentum as well.
Sure. Okay. Well, so let's shift just a bit. So still keeping in the world of your career and your development as an attorney, who have been or what have been some of the guiding forces or influences or maybe role models or things like that?
Yes, well, I'm going to sound very corporate right now, but it's very true.
That's all right.
I when I was a student at Harvard, I was part of the organization committee to organize a conference on arbitration. Because I was French,
sure,
and I was a woman, they told me, you are in charge of, you know, finding a speaker from France.
Okay.
So I looked around and I contacted Carole Manavo, who's currently a partner at Gide in Paris.
Okay.
And I invited her and she came and graciously accepted. And she was actually a Harvard alumni herself. And she has been just, you know, the minute, you know, you meet some people like that, she is so, you know, such a positive, vibrant, and very intellectually stimulating, of course, but she's been a very incredibly, you know, person for me to look up to, I would say. And that was irrespective, you know, of the firm. I didn't really know about Gide and what they were doing. And when I, you know, met her, I looked it up. And so that mentorship relationship developed and I became an associate at Gide Paris. But then also when I moved to New York and I switched firms, we kept in touch. And, you know, she's been, you know, a person that I've looked up to. And there has been actually a lot of women in this field that I have met and that have been great mentors, really. But I think currently speaking, also, I have to say again, like the people I work with here in this office have been amazing mentors to me. Yeah.
Sure. No, I mean, yeah. While corporate, that's still a great answer. That, you know, don't worry about that. Okay. All right. So we'll step away from the professional for just a second.
Yes.
What are you reading right now outside of law?
Outside of law. Well, actually, it's really interesting. I have one of the, I know you said step away from the corporate. It's a bit related to the work in the sense that it was a book that was given to me as a gift by one of our trainees that had just left just a week ago. And I'm mentioning it because I was very touched by that gift. And this book is called Pakistan for Women.
Mm.
And it is a list of women in Pakistan that have inspired, you know, Pakistan. They are for inspiration for Pakistani people.
Sure.
And that includes human rights activists, singers, you know, actresses. And I just, yeah, so I discovered this book. And it's a beautiful book. I really like it. And I have a three-year-old. And so I've started reading it to her as well. And she's really interested. And there's this, so there's a mix of, you know, novels that I read. And then these books, children books.
Yeah.
find that I'm also interested
in. No judgment. No, no, it's fine.
But there's so many incredible books now for, you know, for a younger generation about women that are inspiring other women. And you know, there's this other book called Women That Made History, and it has cartoons and stories about women as different as Coco Chanel and Pocahontas and, you know, Malala. And I just think it's really good for younger generation to understand and read about these little, you know, these heroes really that shaped our history and even today. So I'm trying to look for books to read to my to my daughter, and I'm learning myself along the way. So this is what I do in my free time these days. Yes.
Well, no, especially that last point that you made about learning from a young age and having role models to look up to.
Yes.
I distinctly remember when I was a kid driving to school or maybe to practice or something. My dad, he would give me like Black History pop quizzes.
Yes. Yes.
So, you know, I'd have to have like, you know, three facts or five facts about, you know, certain, you know, Martin Luther King and, you know, Mega Evers and, you know, all these civil rights leaders. So that speaks to me on a very personal level.
I think it's very important to show or, you know, just, you know, that, and it's not just for, again, I'm insisting on the women thing because we were talking about it a lot and I happen to have a 3-year-old daughter, but I just think it's important to tell people that, you know, whoever you are, you know, there's a story and an origin behind it and you should be proud of it, you know, and you're not going to succeed despite that. But, or, you know, it's a whole package of who you are and you should be aware of these different, you know, aspects of your identity, I think, which makes it make you a force. So that's what I'm looking into. Yes.
Well, I think that's true. And that's wonderful to hear. Okay. So that's what you're reading. How about music? What kind of music are you into? What kind of artists do you like? Yeah.
Well, again, I'm very eclectic in that sense.
Okay.
I mean, seriously, I just, you know, even if you look at my iPhone right now, the music I have, it ranges from French music to, as I said, I went to school in the U.S., so I washed up, you know, grew up listening to hip hop and all this, you know, U.S. pop culture music. And also my parents have, you know, introduced me from a younger age to classical Pakistani music.
Sure.
So I'm really listening to all three all the time. And I mean, I'm really into jazz as well, but also into classical. So I'm hard to pinpoint. It depends on my mood, to be honest. Yeah, if I'm working out or listen or drafting a, you know, a statement of claim or what kind of how I feel, you know.
But yeah, do you play any instruments?
I do, actually. I mean, I have to confess, I've stopped a little bit, but I used to play piano a lot.
Okay.
And that's what I was told, that I have a musical ear.
Okay.
So in France, the way they teach you piano is very strict and regimented, and I didn't follow the traditional, you know, classes of piano, but I would sit down and compose, you know, piano songs for myself.
Oh, wow. So you're a composer too.
I wouldn't call myself a composer, but I really enjoy doing that. I used to, when I was a kid, I would just listen to songs and reproduce them immediately on the keyboard.
Oh, wow.
And that's when my parents were like, oh, actually, maybe you have a thing for music. Yeah, maybe you should do that more often. So I wouldn't pick it up. Now you're reminding me that I should pick it up.
Well, yes. I mean, one day you might leave law behind, you know, go start hanging out in Carnegie Hall or something, you know.
Yeah. I think I'm really far from that. But yes. But I think that comes from just, you know, from a very early age, having listened to different kinds of musics. And it's just, you know, just wanting to kind of create your own thing coming from there. Yeah.
Well, sure. Okay. And one more personal question. What was the last movie you saw?
Ah, the last movie I saw.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, there's so many different things. I think the last movie I saw in a theater that I remind was the Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So that I know there's a while ago that it came out, but I saw it late and I loved it.
Okay.
I adored it. I just completely fell in love with
another musical, you know.
Yeah,
thing, right?
Yeah,
right?
No, but I thought the actor was extremely talented. It was a long movie. And I, at some point, I thought, oh, that might be a bit boring, you know, because it's all around, you know, Queen's story, which I knew about, and the songs. But it was really, really incredible. I'm following a series, though. I'm more into series also.
Okay.
And a new one that's called Years and Years.
Years and Years.
I don't know if you've heard about it.
I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. It's a BBC one.
Yeah.
And with Emma Thompson. Absolutely incredible. So I encourage people to see that one.
Okay.
And start watching. Yeah, as well.
Years and Years.
Yeah.
Is it on Netflix?
I don't know. I think it's a BBC one.
Okay.
But it
okay.
might come out on Netflix as well.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Because I know Netflix sometimes has BBC shows
yeah,
on
probably.
It.
Yeah, probably. Okay. I don't know. I'm watching it because I'm here. So now I can benefit from watching
Yeah, you can just
BBC.
Watch it. Yeah. no, yeah. That's very cool.
But that's very, again, very different kind of things. But I really enjoy it. It's, yeah, I won't say too much about it. But it's on, you know, on where we are right now in terms of politics, where it's going, and the invasion of technology, and
sure.
Et cetera, is very interesting.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, fair enough. Okay. Well, and we touched on this a moment ago or earlier in the conversation.
Yeah.
We're just, as lawyers and people that work in this space, we are busy folks.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes there's not a lot of time to take care of your mental and physical health. How do you maintain and balance a healthy lifestyle or hygiene with those things, or mental and physical health?
Right. I think I have to admit, like, it's it was forced upon me, I think, to find a balance. I think becoming a mom necessarily changes you in that respect. Because before, like, you really have to handle one thing in your life. I mean, not, you know, for everyone, but at least for me. And I think it just came with you know, the age also. It's just I was focusing more on work than anything else. And at some point I was like, oh, yeah, no, actually, you know, there's a family and there's, you know, and I want to do other things, etc. And yes, there was a time where I was probably working more than I, you know, so I wasn't very balanced.
Yeah.
Now, however, yes, I try to have, you know, to cut down time for non-work. I also put it as a priority sometimes. So for the weekends, for example, I try to preserve them. And if, you know, unless there's an emergency or something, I mean, I think you need to, and this comes again from a European where, you know, working on a weekend is not normal.
Right.
And I think when it becomes normal is when you need to question yourself as to, you know, why is it? Is it purely necessary or is it not necessarily? So I just try to, I use this tool, which is very easy. The Outlook
okay.
calendar.
You're gonna tell us the secret. Oh, yeah. The Outlook calendar. Okay.
It's not a secret, but ever since I have put my personal things in my professional calendar, I tend to respect it more.
Right.
And that has proven to be effective. So like scheduling, you know, dinners with friends or spending time with, you know, my daughter, one evening or one, morning if I've been away for too long for a hearing, for example, and I haven't seen her for a long time, then I feel like the flexibility goes both ways. Right.
Right.
So if you are, there are times, of course, when you're going to be in the office at 2 a.m, and there are days where you have to work straight, you know, for weeks and weeks and weeks. But at the same time, there are some downtimes when you're waiting for a decision or you've just submitted your pleadings or something like that. And where I think, you know, we should feel less guilty about spending that time and, you know, with our loved ones or doing whatever you want, whether it's music or art or anything else. So I try to be flexible in that sense as well. Yes.
Sure. Sure. So, okay. Well, that sounds like a pretty healthy balance. You know, I try to make it in the gym from time to time
and make
time to meditate and do all the sorts of things in the morning. But it's tough. It's, you know, something you really have to pay attention to.
I think so. I mean, I think the key point here is being organized. And we're often very organized as lawyers for work, but we don't tend to be as rigid, I think, for personal assignments, personal life. And ever since, you know, if you organize your time, even with your loved ones, I think that works well.
Sure. Well, that's well said. Well said. Okay. What are you looking forward to that is non-law, non-professional related in the second half of 2019?
Second half of 2019. Well, actually, I'm really looking forward to... my family is spread out all over the world.
Sure.
You know, because that's how immigration works.
Yeah, that's how you're wrong. I get it. Yeah.
And my cousin is getting married in Chicago. as a result.
Fantastic.
And she's marrying someone from DC. And everyone, so from Pakistan, some France, the UK, you know, different Canada, everyone is going to fly into Chicago. And my brother is in San Francisco. My sister's in Paris. My parents are in France as well. So it's going to be a really nice family reunion. And to be honest, like, it's really rare to have everyone together. And so I'm really looking forward to that. So that's going to happen in July.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that American vacation.
Little USA, then, right?
Exactly. Yeah. But it's going to be a traditional Pakistani wedding.
Fantastic.
Which is interesting. So I'm looking forward to that, really. Okay. That's going to happen in a couple of months. And so that's one thing I'm looking forward to. Yeah.
Okay. And let's do the first of, as we approach towards the end of the show.
Yes.
Let's do two hypotheticals.
Yes.
Okay. Say you're out at a conference or you know, you're walking down the street and because you're, you know, Celebrity International Dispute Resolution, a student sees you and they say, Sadia, you know, I want to break into international dispute resolution. I'm a student or I'm someone that's currently a lawyer. I hate what I'm doing. I want to break into international dispute resolution. How do I do that? What's the secret?
What's the secret? Well, I don't think there is a secret, actually. I think well, it depends where you are in your career. If there's someone who has absolutely zero experience in arbitration, mm-hmm. my first advice to them would be, get the experience, right? And they'll tell me, how do I get the experience? Is the second question.
Right.
And I think, you know, people tend to equate experience with necessarily an internship in a big law firm. And I think, of course, I think everybody has to get there at some point, or even actually, no, you don't need to necessarily get there. But there's so many more possibilities. I mean, you could get experience in an arbitration center, and there's so many of them now. And it's so exciting. I mean, go to Kigali, go to the Asian Arbitration Center, go to Cairo, go to Hong Kong. Think, you know, about the next generation jurisdictions. I mean, there's so much happening right now with the One Belt, One Road project in China. I mean, where are you from, first of all? You know, I would ask that person, which jurisdiction are you from? Make this your force. Make this your, you know, added value, your competitive advantage.
Yeah, sure, your edge, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, getting experience, of course, in a law firm, but you can also, like I said, arbitration center, you can also clerk for, I mean, I say clerk for a judge, the American style, but it's actually, you can help an arbitrator as a secretary, you could do that. And then in addition to that, there's so many other things that they can get involved with, like all the organization I'm involved in. If you're interested, let me know.
Sure.
We're always looking for help, you know, and that's the word. It's like, just go to people and say, how can I help you?
Well, careful with that. We're going to put that in the quotes, you know. Sadia said, come to her, you know, if you want to get involved, you know.
No, but instead of going to people and be like, how do I get a job? Just say, how can I help? And you can publish, you can be part of, you know, of all these amazing young groups that have been set out by so many different institutions, and whether they're women groups or a regional focus group in Africa, or all the institution have their young groups. I mean, there's just, I think, endless possibilities to get involved in arbitration. OJMID is one as well, right? I mean, young OJMID, you can post online. You can write for Clure. I mean, I can go on and on and on. So I usually, and this question actually comes to me quite often.
Sure.
And I do try to make time for people who ask me the question, because I think it's a good question. And usually when people walk out of, you know, students or young practitioners who have never had an experience in arbitration, I tell them there are so many opportunities. They're surprised at how, you know, I make it sound very easy, and they're like, is it that easy as that? And I'm like, well, it's not easy, but you have to be aware that there are plenty, plenty of opportunities out there. And you just need to be ready to, you know, think a little bit outside of the box and be ready to offer yourself as, you know, as help, I think.
Well, no, I think that's right. And you mentioned one organization or one group in particular, OGMID, I think is a fantastic listserv. So I'm going to break the fourth wall here and talk to you listeners during an interview.
Yeah.
You know, if you are a student or someone that is similar to the person I've just described in this hypothetical that wants to do something international dispute resolution, right now, you know, after you're done listening to the show, of course, go online and Google OGMID, and you'll find, if you're a young practitioner, you'll find the young OGMID, which is the one you might be applicable for, and see if you're interested in the listserv. There are lots of conversations that go on about all sorts of different topics in international ADR, their job postings there, and they're fascinating conversations. Yes, you know, between now and next week, I'm challenging you to go do that, and that's a good way to get your foot in the door.
Yes, and I completely agree, and if I may just add to that, it's very, very international.
Yes.
I mean, that's one thing that people forget is, like, regardless of your jurisdiction, people will be there from that jurisdiction posting about it. And if they're not, you do it, you know? And that's incredible, the amount of things. And also another thing that I've discovered is that if you have an idea about whether it's a conference or a roundtable discussion or a publication or, you know, like your podcast, which is incredible, just make it happen.
Yeah.
Just do it.
You know, you don't have to wait for permission. No, just go do it.
No, you don't have to wait for someone to come to you and say, hey, I need help for this, this, this. Just create the opportunity. I have met the most incredible people along the way as I approached them, you know, if they wanted to be potential speakers at events that I was organizing or initiatives that I had thought about. And just make it happen. I think you've got the platform to do it, you know.
Absolutely. And before we get to our last question, Sadia, how important would you rank or would you rate language acquisition skills?
Right. Well, I think I'm a little bit biased with this question because I was privileged to grow up in a household where we were speaking three languages at the same time.
Sure.
So I didn't really have to work hard, I think, to speak, you know, French, English, or Urdu. And I was very lucky in that respect. I do think it's very important. I think because it is very much an international practice, right? So you are going to come across... you know, your linguistic skills are going to help you in the type of work that you are going to do.
Right.
That is for sure true. I mean, you know, if you speak Spanish, then you're going to have access to a whole range of cases, a whole range of you know, opportunities that a non-Spanish speaker would have, right? First thing. The second thing is, and it's not me saying it, I mean, it's been scientifically proven that if you know different languages, your approach to different cultures and the way you understand things I think you have a much fuller and complete picture of things, and which is what you need as an international arbitration lawyer. I mean, you never deal with only one kind of law.
That's true.
You know, you have a governing law and a seat that's different, and you have different nationalities, and you know, the clients involved is different than the other party. The arbitrator's nationality is different, and this all has. You're constantly, and we were talking about this offline, I think you need to adapt yourself constantly, whether it's in advocacy, writing or oral, or how you conduct yourself with your clients, how you manage your team, you know, all of these things. So, yes, I think learning a new language opens this door, A, for linguistic capabilities, and two, I said A, so it's B, for the cultural sensitivity that you get. So in short, I would say very important.
Very important.
Yeah, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, thanks. And I'm sure this hypothetical person appreciates all of that advice. Okay. So final question. It is 5 or 6 o'clock on a Friday, you know, whenever you're done working for the week. You don't have any client matters. You're off call, you know, not expecting anything. Mm-hmm. And you can do whatever you want to do for the weekend. How are you going to spend that weekend?
How am I going to spend that weekend? Well, I have to say, I mean, this is the first thing that comes to my mind. And it's not a very sexy response, but I will go to my three-year-old.
She's sure.
Yeah, she's incredible. And I'm learning from her a lot these days, actually. She's constantly asking why to every single thing I tell her. So I have to think
about the response.
yes, and she is, yes. So, you know, we have such a busy life.
Sure.
You know, and I think, you know, the little moments I have tend to believe that they're the most precious one.
Sure.
So simple things such as just going home and chilling, not doing anything, like you say, having nothing planned, is probably the best kind of, the best use of my time right now in my life, I think.
Yeah. Okay, that's fair enough. No, that's a great way to spend the weekend. Okay, do you want to give any shout-outs?
Shout-outs? Oh, there's so many people I want to give a shout-out to. But if I give a name, then I'm going to curse myself for not giving another name. So what I'm going to say is that because I've talked a lot about women that have been an inspiration for me, and you know, I'm part of all these wonderful organizations about women, one thing that I think I do want to say is that I want to give a shout-out to all the men out there who have been supporting women.
Wow, okay.
I have been extremely lucky to have, wonderful men, it sounds weird to say it like that, but it's true, who have been mentors and supporting me in every kind of way, you know, and that I think it's important to pause for a second in this world where we're talking about women and not getting the equal opportunity, which is true. I completely agree with this. But we need to include the men in discourse, and there are so many incredible men out there, and also in this community, that are helping women, and that are helping juniors to become seniors, and that are helping women become better lawyers, and so I'm just, I think this is an important part of it. Also, men that support women's careers at home. So you need to have the support, I think, from your organization. And I mean, I can say it. I'm very lucky to work with a partner here who's called Rupert Reese, and he has 5 children. Mm. And he's been an incredible mentor for me. And at the same time, I've also been extremely lucky to have a husband who has been supportive of my career. He's also working full time. But if it wasn't for him, I think I wouldn't be able to be away, like, for a week or 2 weeks for a hearing or for a conference, etc. So, in short, yeah, no one in particular, but to all these men out there that are helping the women, I think also, shine.
Well, that's great. Live and excel and break down that glass thing. I think
it's
important for any minority group, those that are in the majority, have the duty to, to be allies and to support the minority group. So.
Yes, exactly. And again, like when I say this, I don't want to say that I don't want to give a shout out to women. I mean, there's so many out there that I think are incredible, and many of those are going to be giving the podcast. But it's just, I just think it's important right now to mention that there's a lot of positive energy in making that happen.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Well, great. No, well, thank you for coming by the studio. And,
thank you.
I said coming by the studio as if there's an actual studio.
Wonderful studio.
For doing an episode, I really appreciate your time. And do you want to sign us off?
Well, thank you very much for having me. I am Sadia, and there's no disputing it. You're listening to Tales of the Tribunal.
So that was my conversation with Sadia Bhatti. She was a fantastic guest on the show. I hope that you gained a lot from that conversation. I really want to give a big shout out and thank you to Sadia. She really was very accommodating and very flexible, very gracious to lend out one of Geet's conference rooms for us to record this episode, and really was quite quick to respond to my request to do an interview with her on such short notice. So thank you, Sadia, for doing the show once again. As mentioned at the show's beginning, that was my final conversation in London, so the rest of the episodes will be from somewhere else. Before we get out of here this week, I want to remind you all once again that the LinkedIn page is officially launched. That will more and more become the primary means by which I communicate with all of you fine listeners out there in podcast land. Aside from announcing the show every week on my personal page, primarily we will be launching and announcing each week's new episodes on the LinkedIn page. So without further ado, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you have any questions, comments, or anything else for the show, feel free to get in touch via talesofthetribunal@gmail.com or shoot us a message on LinkedIn. Without further ado, there's no disputing it. You're listening to Tales of the Tribunal, and we'll see you next week.